Well, Barbara Natterson Horowitz, thanks for taking a few minutes. By the way, your new book is just terrific. Zubiquity really opens up a neat window into looking at the world a different way. You know, I've often said to colleagues that I get better advice and questions from my veterinarian that takes care of our dog than I do from my, you know, general practitioner who just says, yeah, you're fine, get out of here. You know, the vet asks about nutrition, the vet asks about how much the dog eats, the vet asks, does it ever get any exercise? And of course, as your subtitle of your book says, what animals can teach us about health and the science of healing. So you've certainly done a lot of different things, both yourself as a hotshot at UCL Medical School, but also, I think, on the advisory committee to the LA Zoo, right?
Yeah. I'm a heart doctor to human beings. So I've taken care of people with heart attacks and high cholesterol for a couple of decades. But then I had this really incredible opportunity to become a member of the medical advisory board of our local zoo. And it was there that I first began learning about veterinary medicine at all. I mean, like most physicians, I was pretty clueless about what veterinarians do, what their training is like. But there I was listening to the veterinarians talking about, you know, congestive heart failure in a gorilla or leukemia in a rhinoceros. And I had this insight, actually, that every veterinarian knows, of course, but that most physicians don't, that vets and physicians treat most of the same diseases, but in just different species.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. Your book explores also a lot of our diseases go way back, and in some ways we share some of the same diseases, but might also be able to share some of the solutions or the cures.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, one of the interesting perspectives is this idea that, you know, medicine has this evolutionary context. So one example is cancer. You know, the disease of cancer, very often, you know, we know there are lots and lots of things that we human beings do to increase our risk of developing cancer. You know, we smoke and our diets are poor and all that. But on the other hand, if you stripped away all of our bad human habits, you would still find that, you know, even in wild settings, some animals sometimes get cancer. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the fossil record shows that even, you know, not centuries ago, but millennia ago, I mean, 60, 70, 80 million years ago, there's evidence of cancer in the bones even of some dinosaurs. So that is a really fascinating perspective I just never thought about before.
You know, it is interesting to think that certainly some of these things are natural and not brought on by the problems we have today, you know, of pollution as well as bad choices. But tell us a bit, honestly, even with your colleagues, you know, as a cardiologist, some of them must say, Barbara, what are you doing over at the zoo?
I'm sort of a typical academic cardiologist, teaching medical students and interns and residents and fellows. And when this opportunity happened, and I started to, you know, 99% of the time I was taking care of human patients, doing procedures, but I really lived for the once-in-a-while call from the veterinarians to come and spend some time at the zoo. But what started happening, at first my colleagues, you know, I'd come back and I'd say, oh my gosh, you know, I did this echocardiogram, this cardiac ultrasound on a great ape, and they were concerned about, you know, the health of his aorta. So the aorta is the largest artery in the body, and, you know, there's a condition that occurs that sometimes the aorta can tear and even rupture, and that's a very serious condition. It takes the lives of thousands of humans a year. It actually took the life of Albert Einstein, Lucille Ball. But until I started working with the vets at the zoo, I didn't realize that it has also claimed the lives of some great apes, including gorillas, as you know. But what was really interesting is I began bringing that back to the medical school where I teach. When I would give a lecture on aortic dissection, I would offer this comparative perspective. You know, in veterinary medicine, you guys are taught this comparative approach. So when you learn about heart failure, you learn about it in a mammal with four cardiac chambers, but also in a reptile with three cardiac chambers, and maybe even a fish with two cardiac chambers. We only learn about one species. So introducing this comparative idea to physicians-to-be, I think really expanded how they began understanding the disorder in the humans that they'll ultimately take care of.
Absolutely. And in fact, in your book, one of the most compelling chapters you called Scared to Death, it's about heart attacks in the wild. And as a cardiologist, I thought, gosh, well, you really brought it in that chapter. And perhaps a reason is we all live with this myth of, oh, well, I don't have a heart attack, so I'll stay healthy or I'll stay lean or, you know, I'll get exercise. But clearly it can happen to a wild animal, not just in a zoo or a pet, but to, as you pointed out, even dinosaurs.
The disorder that I learned about from, you know, veterinarians and zoo vets, your colleagues, was this idea that there's a syndrome that's been described in animals, from rabbits to hoofed animals to primates, where when the animals get very scared, maybe they're being chased by a predator or they're being restrained, their bodies can be flooded with adrenaline. And the effect of that, there can be lots of different effects, but one of them is that it can cause sometimes acute heart failure and even sometimes, rarely, death. Well, learning about that was really interesting. The veterinarians told me it was called capture myopathy. And myopathy is a term that every physician knows. It means diseases of the muscle. But capture myopathy was something I'd never heard about. When I learned what it was, what was particularly exciting was that veterinarians have been describing, treating, and even preventing captured myopathy for decades. I mean, it's in the veterinary literature dating back to the 1950s. And yet it wasn't until about the year 2000 that on the human medical side, we quote-unquote discovered stress-induced heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading this very important article in one of the main cardiology journals in about the year 2000 that described human patients who had, you know, witnessed a loved one being killed, or a woman being left at the altar, or someone losing his life savings, you know, at the roulette table, these really intense emotional experiences, that they had this stress-induced heart failure and sometimes sudden death. And when I realized that vets had known about this for decades and we physicians had only recently described it, that was really the moment that I thought, well, this gulf is something worth exploring. And that was really what catalyzed the whole project.
Well, absolutely. And of course, the title's a great one, too, Zubiquity. Tell a bit about how you came up with that title and if it has an inner meaning.
Yes. Well, when I first started working at the zoo and hanging out with the veterinarians, you know, I learned about this emerging kind of movement called One Health, which is this idea that, you know, veterinarian, human medicine, and ecology should come closer together. What I got very interested in was moving beyond thinking about the connection between animal and human health as only being about infections. The connections between animal and human health are much, much greater than that. There are mental health similarities. There are cancer similarities. I mean, it is truly endless. And so when my co-author, Catherine Bowers, and I were looking for a term to describe looking at human medical concerns and animal medical concerns under one umbrella, a kind of a species-spanning approach, we couldn't find a word to really describe it. So we created our own, zoo from the Greek zoo for animal, and then ubiquity, which is the Latin for everywhere. And that's how we came up with ubiquity.
Well, absolutely, because it does, you know, your work in this book does provide a different perspective. And you know it's a good one when you start to read it and you realize, yeah, you know what, this makes a ton of sense. As you said, a lot of these are, you know, based in evolution, that organisms all share a lot of common ancestors, and there's a lot to be learned. And as a result, as you put it in your book, you're redefining the boundaries of medicine. Have you had any pushback, either from MD colleagues or even the veterinary world?
You know, I mean, it's a good question. Veterinarians really get this for the most part. I mean, our experience is when I present, I give a lecture and I have a slide that says, do animals get breast cancer? Do they get prostate cancer? Do they get Crohn's disease? Do they get sexually transmitted diseases? And then I click I go to the next slide that's yes, 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 yes. Well, when veterinarians see that slide, they just nod their heads and they know that. In fact, once in a while, one of them will say, yeah, duh, of course, that's what they do. But when I show that same slide to groups of medical students, physicians, even some very august academic physicians, the response is very different. For most physicians, this is new information. So there hasn't been pushback. It's just really, it's new. Now, most physicians, when you begin talking to them about the fact that, yes, congestive heart failure can happen in a camel or a rhinoceros, they think about it for a minute or two, and they're like, of course, of course. But so there's not ultimately sort of a scientific resistance. It's just that, you know, your field and my field, unfortunately, there's been a gulf in how we train and I'm trying to bridge that gap by creating these conferences, these ubiquity conferences, where I bring together academic physicians and academic vets to really meet each other in a way. Kind of the chapter is called Dr. House Meet Dr. Doolittle.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, a little silly. But so there's no actual pushback. It's mostly just education and recognizing that we are all part of the same field, basically. In fact, one of the little jokes that vets have at physicians' expense, we heard a few times as we were writing the book, there's a veterinary joke that goes, what do you call a veterinarian who can only take care of one species?
An MD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. That's actually pretty good, because vets, even just your community vet, have to handle a lot. And as you know, a vet at a major zoo like the LA Zoo has to handle hundreds of different species.
Yeah. I mean, you know, here I am. I'm a cardiologist, and even within cardiology, I do imaging. And within imaging, I image for procedures that have to do with cardiac arrhythmias. I mean, I'm very, very, very narrow, like a lot of physicians in subspecialties.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch what the veterinarians, for example, at the LA Zoo do and do incredibly well, I mean, they are, first of all, they're pediatricians, internists, and geriatrics. So they're taking care of animals through all phases of the life cycle. They do deliveries. They do some surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, and they do it in multiple species.
Oh yeah.
So it's a very different skill set and approach. And yet, when I sit and listen to them on rounds, it is so familiar. It really is rounds are rounds. Whether you're talking about gorillas and, you know, rhinos and camels, or you're talking about human patients. And so there's this familiarity and yet this difference.
Well, no kidding. And as I said, your book is really terrific. So thanks for that. And thanks for the work you're doing to help the zoo field as well.
Oh, my pleasure. It's really wonderful to meet you and admire your work as well.
Well, thanks. When you come out to the Midwest, maybe for a conference, come visit our zoo. We've got some vets that'll show you around.
Oh, I'd love that.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
My guest has been Dr. Barbara Natterson Horowitz, author of the book Zoobiquity, What Animals Can Teach Us About Health and the Science of Healing. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.